There is no phone ringing, dammit!
What the hell are you talking about? Do you know what the hell she's talking about?
Now what in hell am I going to tell this boy Shaver's parents? That a substitute nurse assassinated him because she couldn't tell the doctors from the patients on the floor? My God!
Okay, you let a woman beat ya! You little tiny nothing!
Why did you move closer to me?
Don't, Bob.
His name was Jeremiah Johnson.
Norma Ray has been working since she was 16.
Jeff Goldblum is the psycho freak who's everywhere the action is.
That's outrageous!
You try one more goddamn stunt and I'll light up the fucking sky!
I'd rather die running than be left here alone.
Okay, but remember, serpentine!
Absolutely.
What a guy.
Who can fuck the lilies and the roses too?
A decade under the influence. No rules, no limits. No wonder these filmmakers changed our world.
Welcome to podcast. We're going to talk about movies on our movie podcast. But first, we have some housekeeping. We're sponsored today by, what was it, Purple Green Butt Sex?
Purple Green Butt Sex, yeah.
You said bubble green. Start purple. Over. You fucked up.
I didn't fuck up.
Well, I did.
Purple you Green
did.
Butt Sex.
Well, that's what we're sponsored by. We got six movies for you today.
We do have six movies.
And I'm tired because I attacked Ashes with some Febreze and won. I won the Febreze battle.
Yeah, because you invoked the "Don't get me back, please" rule.
Yeah.
Just
folks, invoke the "Don't get me back, please" rule if you want to win.
Yeah, it's like a one quick cheat.
Did I say we got six movies
you
today?
Did.
We're going to start out with you, Tribes, 1970.
We're going in order. Okay, hold on.
We're always going in order, except that one time we didn't, because I was on drugs or something.
All right, let's see here.
Someone's crunching.
I know.
You look cute in your glasses. Look at that.
Thanks.
I wish you could see it.
All right, this movie actually has three different titles, or three different titles at different points. It was called The Tribes, and released in the UK as The Soldier Who Declared Peace. Which I kind of dig. This is our director here is Joseph Sargent, who also directed The Man, The Taking of Pelham 123, and he also is uncredited for Buck and Preacher. Which, Victor, I wanted to ask you because you did Buck and Preacher write up. Is he the one that got fired? Do you remember?
I do not remember.
Well, disappointing. Our writers here are Tracy Keegan Wynn and Marvin Schwartz. This stars Darren McGavin, who you would know from No Deposit, No Return, Shaft, and Mrs. Paula Fax, Spy. I left that off there for you, by the way.
Do it. It's your thing. I'm just here to observe.
It's not my thing.
The guy who stole all the glue from A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
He didn't steal all the glue. See, I fucked it up.
His wife stole all the glue.
His wife used all the glue on purpose. I wanted you to do it.
Jan Michael Vincent also stars in this. You'll remember
yes.
him from Sandcastles, Damnation
yes.
Alley, and Vigilante Force.
Will you remember him from Sandcastles?
Absolutely. I have not seen Vigilante Force. It's him and Kris Kristofferson. And I'm kind of dying to see it now. I watched the trailer and it is bananas.
Good research.
Yeah. So, the Marines are taking draftees now? Bullshit! But it's one man's job to change this group of ne'er-do-wells into an elite fighting force. Drill instructor Drake, Darren McGavin, struggles to understand and motivate hippie recruit Adrian, JMV, who uses his meditative and disassociative powers to cruise through all of his training. His fellow recruits are stunned by his abilities, and so he starts teaching them his ways. Pretty soon, these Marines are all chanting and meditating together, and Drill Sergeant Darren has to figure out what to do about it. But you know the old saying goes, if you don't change the hippie will change you.
That was marvelous. That was a great pitch. I'm greenlighting your movie. Let's do it. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, and a pretty good movie ensued from there. I've got a little bit more, but we can fit it in here. Discuss.
I would love to give this movie a 10 because it just has the guy from A Christmas Story yelling, at hippies for an hour and a half. And it was kind of at that moment that we watched it. It was exactly what I wanted. It exceeded my expectations 400%.
Wow. There is a lot of yelling in this movie.
And it's like fun and less triggering because you can't get past made-for-TV movie.
Right. It's never going to get worse than they could give on TV. This apparently
Which
was
can be pretty bad.
Hugely popular.
Yeah, it's the best.
It was also released on the 193rd anniversary of the Marines.
Oh, God.
Which I thought was interesting. It was also... this movie had input from the Marines, and they were like, everything's great about this film. Which I thought was an interesting thing about it, because it's not exactly a pro-military...
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How did this movie end? Did he go to Nam and die? How did it end?
No, remember...
No, he ran away.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler.
Mr. McGavin had brought him back to the base and was like, dude, don't run away. That sucks. You're gonna get in a bunch of trouble. And he's like, okay. And, like... is ready to go to Nam and serve his country, and then the guy's like, you didn't pass, you gotta go through it again. And then he ran away.
He didn't pass?
Yeah, they failed him.
Oh, that sucked. Oh, yeah, you didn't mention the other guy.
I didn't mention the other guy. There's lots of things I didn't mention about this.
Because he's like, doing it his way, and then the other guy is mad. Is he mad because he's not hard enough on hippies? I can't remember.
He is mad about that, yeah.
Because he is rallying them, and he's like... making him look bad, but then it makes Christmas Story guy think about it. I kind of liked it.
It does make him think about it, and he draws his picture of a bird, and he's all excited about
it. Oh, yeah! There's a lot of metaphor in this.
Yeah.
Picture of a bird.
He crumples it up when he gets complimented about it.
Shut up! There's a lot of big picture stuff in here that they just barely touch on, but I've been thinking about it since I watched this movie.
Hmm.
I like it.
It got a theatrical release. It was so popular.
Yeah, I'm going to give it another one. But we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm playing Davin.
Oh, sweet. I get to be JMV.
You can play every other character. Because, like, the drill sergeant, like, what would be the sequel to this, you know? He stops being a drill sergeant and sending people off to war. He, like, has second thoughts about how he's been living his life.
Maybe.
Because of the metaphysical whatever of...
Opens a commune to get people centered.
He opens a commune, yeah.
Yeah. Remember, they have a conversation about communes in this as well.
Or perhaps, like, questions his ideals around... Western civilization being superior to Eastern civilization.
Yeah.
Whoa, whoa, one step at a time. Just start, you know.
Like, what is this transcendental
stopping
meditation
Nam? It was
stuff.
Only 1970. He's a Vietnam vet against the war.
So another
in my sequel.
Interesting little tidbit that was on IMD about this that I thought I'd include here was Jan Michael Vincent was actually an active member of the Army Reserve and National Guard during the making of this film. Why McGavin was drafted for World War II, but was found medically ineligible.
Hmm.
So, one of these people.
So he went to Hollywood. So I'm writing the script for 2. Victory's writing the script for 3.
Yeah.
Anti-Western civilization. What's your script for 4?
I don't know that I have like a maybe he ascends. His consciousness grows so huge and all-encompassing that he ascends this mortal plane.
I like all of this. I like this very much.
What started out?
What's your pitch for the sequels to the movie Tribes? Anything else on this?
What else
did you write?
Oh, I already gave my facts.
All of them?
Yeah, they're all out. All out now.
Oh, okay.
That's.
Are you going to rate it? You want to rate it?
I actually rated this a 7 on IMDb. I liked it a lot. It was a good movie. It was interesting. I don't think I've seen another one that was similar to it.
Yeah,
although
thumbs up.
It did have that shooting scene in the shower that was real similar to... Was it not, it's not Apocalypse Now, it's Platoon or whatever it is.
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket, thank you.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of different, but they did go into that, like, right away, which is, I mean, I think your drill sergeant's bread and butter. Which is, but they were doing it even before the drill sergeant fucking said anything to amp them up. Be like, you know, I am failed because you were not motivating him. So you need to beat him with soap until he gets motivated. I'm going to make you all do push-ups and he's just going to sit there and eat donuts.
Well, I think the majority of the,
but there was a guy in the beginning that was like, what?
Well, I think the majority of the people on the bus with him were ROTC guys. Who were,
oh, shut up. That's true.
Yeah. So they were, they, this was not their,
they were already pumped.
They were already in. Yeah.
And it was interesting how there was that, you know, the pride in the Marines. And it was like people that first went to Nam that had chosen to be here. And then all of a sudden these hippies showed up. He did a really good job. I would give this a 7, like you did, but I'm pumping it up to an 8 because Christmas Story exists. And it just, I had a wonderful time watching this movie.
It's certainly like a different role.
I was just thinking that in the back of my head, like, I'm having a very good time because Christmas Story exists and I'm having a ball watching him be a drill sergeant. That's why he buys his son a BB gun, because he loves guns.
That's right. I'm going to teach you to be a man. Elite fighting force.
And it was neat that, like, it didn't feel like a lot of early 70s movies, even though it had your hippie in it.
Yep.
It seemed, you know, more put together and less ethereal, like a lot of movies we watch from 1970 that are drenched in 1969, and the people are so much on acid they can barely keep the camera straight.
The other
this
thing,
was done well.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And for this to have taken place and was on television during the war,
pretty intense,
I think, is pretty important, too. Because, yeah, it is a conversation with the community about, are draftees appropriate at all? Should that be a thing? The Marines ended accepting draftees shortly after this.
Oh.
And they only did it for a very short amount of time. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
You ready to move on?
I am.
Number 2, Walking Stick. That's UV, 1970.
Yeah.
All right, hold on.
This stick was made for walking.
My computer turned itself off.
Boo.
I know.
I'm just waiting on a burp, so you have to fill the space.
Well, I had the song going. Oh, the cats are going to fight. Oh, yeah. Sorry, my cats are swiping at each other, and it's exciting. I could see it happening. You still not in? Jesus.
No, it turned itself all the way off.
All the way off.
You can pause it. Just pause it.
All right.
Oh, God.
All right. Directed by Eric Till, the same guy who brought us ABC After School Specials. Written by Winston Graham, who adapted his novel to a screenplay for the psychological thriller, starring David Hemmings and Samantha Eggar. The film follows introverted and traumatized polio survivor Deborah as she is courted by an unsettlingly persistent artist named Lee. Lee is a duffel bag of red flags stacked under a coat, leading viewers through what is supposed to be a romantic courtship, but is just off. Deborah intuitively feels this and hesitates, but is eventually swept off her feet nonetheless. Once she relents and moves in with him, the veneer begins peeling off.
Oh, God.
By the time she realizes the truth, she's in too deep and has committed a serious crime for the love of a man who never really existed. Discuss.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking us through it. It was like right at the end of that bing or ding, the plot where he does the entire relationship to use her strategically to rob something.
Yep.
And that's the only reason I think I kind of liked the movie, because it had that little twist or something.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
it's just creepy guy being creepy.
Yeah, it was well filmed. She's really good in it. I like her a lot. What does this say? Some men will ask anything. Some women will do anything a man asks. I read it backwards.
Oh.
Gross.
Usually when we read the posters or like the taglines, I just get it like totally wrong.
My little, so for each movie, I try to take just a quick note on each thing, so I can, something that'll like stir my memory. And for this one, I wrote, artist with even more red flags than most. And I like that. Because he was all kinds of wrong. I mean,
yeah.
I think we were all rooting so heavy for him not, for her not to talk to him at all.
Yeah.
Like,
and at first she, like, it was like, okay, good, she gets it. And then little by little, she's just chipped away at.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, this can't be good.
And what really upset me about this was that, like, her community around her was like, come on. Just like, why don't you date him? He's a.
They're like, you're gonna be an old maid with that disability you've got.
Jesus.
And she's like, I would be fine with that. Then rather than date this man, and they're like, nope. You gotta go.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how fucking weird he is, and all these weird things that he's doing. That he shows up at your work, and that he's mad at you all the time for reasons that we can't understand.
She figures it out, right? I mean, does she stab him in the throat? What's the resolve? She figures she just leaves him?
No, she...
But I mean, does the robbery...
She snitches on him.
And what was the robbery?
So, she worked for an
auction
house.
We watched so many of these types of fucking movies. So I'm like, was it like... What was it? Bail bonds? What is the one where they had the...
No, bearer she worked, bonds.
Was the crime guy.
A,
yeah, thank you.
She worked at a high-end auction house.
Yeah.
Yes!
And they were having, like, some jewel... auction weekend or something like that, and they'd loaded all the place up, getting ready for it, and then they had her hide in a cabinet to then sneak out and open the door and turn off the alarm, and then they ran in and punched.
How did he gaslight her into that, and when did she figure it out?
She figured it out before.
So he tricked her into thinking that, like, some shadowy mafia guy was after him and saying that he had to do it or he might be murdered or something like that. And that they get to keep some of it and open up a shop together.
Yeah.
'Cause she had tried to get him a job as an artist. And the art galleries took a look at his stuff. And
I remember
like,
that.
This is really bad, actually. Like, there's no...
Your art is pedestrian at best.
Not even doing this as a favor to you. No. No, thank you. What's really funny, actually, is that the artwork that is used in the majority of the scenes is the art of David Hemmings. So it's
awesome.
Actually his art.
Oh, wow.
For fun. So does she just make a phone call at the end and the movie pieces out? My memory of it.
Kind of. She makes a phone call, or no, she has a letter to send. That's it.
Oh, no. Not more letters.
And she confronts him, and he, like, he finally spills the beans on everything and is like, no, but I kind of did fall in love with you a little bit. And, you know, it's just... And then fucking she drops the letter because she's like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, it's like
bullshit.
Everything he had ever told her about him was a lie.
Even weird stuff that he did not need to lie about, mm-hmm. which is kind of how everything started to unravel, right? Because
yeah.
She's like, who is that who came to the house? He's like, oh, it's my dad's neighbor. And he's like, okay. And then she comes by again, and she's like, oh, you live next to his dad, right? And she's like, I'm his mom.
Yes. I forgot about that. I've been...
His dad's
a testament
not sick. He's
to
fine.
This
he's
movie.
At home.
It's got some dull as dishwater.
A lot, yeah.
I mean, I like that she figured it out.
And he's married, too.
And, yeah. I like that she figured it out and, like, you know, kicked him to the curb or whatever. And... narked on him, but Gaslight did it better.
Yeah. Gaslight did do it better.
But they're slightly similar, and I don't hate this.
It's like a heist Gaslight combination movie.
This one, you know, in true 70s form is very real, though. Like,
oh, Paula.
Give us more on that. Tell me more. What do you mean?
Just the ways that he lies about himself, the way that he conducts himself in the relationship, like, the writing is really good at portraying a narcissist.
Hmm.
Well, so it's Gaslight.
Yeah, but I...
He gaslit so well, they made it the term.
It's a little over the top. It's good. We watched it on my birthday. But it's also a product of its time.
I was late for my birthday party.
It was like a little bit. It was a little bit more bonk bonk, whereas like this one is a little bit more like you could see someone watching the movie and being like, "What? What's wrong with this guy? What are you talking about?" And then you're just justified in the end for being like, "No, that was all the red flags. Are you kidding?"
That dude, crazy creeper. I did not rate this one.
We could do it all right now.
Yeah. So I'm going to go... I think I'm going to go with a 7 for this one as well.
I'd do a 6.5. I guess like it's a 10.
Yeah, I also think that this is a thumbs up. It's not like a brilliant, amazing movie, but it's a thumbs up.
No. And I agree with what you're saying. The writing was sharp about how he's a scoundrel.
Mm-hmm.
But not it's also too obvious, right?
No.
It's very realistic.
I think it gets obvious towards the end. She's the last to get it.
I think it's obvious. She's not the last to get it. Her family's still like, "Hey, he's a great guy."
What happened?
I mean, he's someone
you
who
found
likes...
a man.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You're crippled and you found a man, so I mean... So fucked up. Oh, the other thing that really fucking made me hate this guy is he takes away her cane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's like portrayed as this like such romantic moment where, you know, he's like somehow magically restoring her faith in her own mobility. Like, what? But I like that. I like that the movie kind of seems like it's steering you in this like inspirational story of this woman who's been held back by her family, you know, telling her that she's, you know, can never be this, that, or whatever on her own. And you know, this man's coming in and liberating her from her caged existence. And you know, this moment is supposed to be her, like, you know, seeing what she's truly capable of. But they're all along that path. There's just, like, stuff in it that is, like, no, wait a minute. No, that's fucked up. And like, and that's one of them that is like, hold on. We're supposed to be happy for her. And then it's like, no, actually, like you questioning that moment was right. It's
some good acting in here. I forgot Phyllis Calvert was in here. I think she might play her mother.
I think she does,
yeah. Did a lot of awesome silver screen movies. You ready to move forward?
Mm-hmm. I am.
To an even more exciting movie, 11 Harrow House.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I get to go.
1974, that's you.
All right. Our director here is Aram Avakian, who we remember from...
Bob Avakian.
It's Bob Avakian's brother out there. Not on the lam. He was our director from Cops and Robbers. The End of the Road, and One Night Stand. Our writers here is a thruple of Gerard A. Brown, Jeremy Bloom, and Charles Grodin.
I remember Jeremy Bloom.
Oh, sorry, Jeffrey.
Well, Jeffrey maybe. Bloom. I'm not going to look it up. You go.
This stars Candace Bergen, who you'd remember from Getting Straight, T.R. Baskin, and Oliver Story, Charles Grodin from Rosemary's Baby, Thieves, and Heaven Can Wait.
Murphy Brown.
Yeah, Candace Bergen, of course, is Murphy Brown. And then James Mason is here, also from Heaven Can Wait. The Boys from Brazil and Child's Play.
James Mason.
All right. 11 Harrow House is the story of a small-time diamond merchant who gets asked to purchase and cut a diamond that is way out of his league. He and his girlfriend are robbed on the way to deliver the diamond and have to return with nothing in hand. Howard, Charles Grodin, has taken literally no precautions any reasonable dealer would have, and is put in the position of having to rob the diamond house that he normally purchases from. It needs to be noted that his girlfriend, Marin, who is Candace Bergman, offers to just pay his debt, but he refuses, instead agreeing to the robbery. but he can't do it on his own. And so instead of accepting the cash help from her in the robbery, he gets her involved in a robbery that she does not need to do because she is an actual millionaire. They team up with Charles Watts, James Mason, who is their man on the inside. The heist goes down as planned with a scene of diamond vacuuming that can only be described as fucking long. They return home to the person who demanded the heist to realize that they were being duped and that they were to be killed. A weird chase scene ensues, and the two are saved by Murphy Brown's lesbian side piece. Once away, they have to figure out what to do with the billions in diamonds that they've stolen, and they decide to mix it into concrete and pour a fountain out of it. End of movie.
That was cool, that part. And your thing was cool.
Oh, thank you.
And probably more exciting than this movie, because sadly it's not as exciting as it should be.
No,
it you didn't mention the cockroaches. How you used the cockroaches.
There is the weirdest note in that where, like, I don't know who wrote it, but they're like, the hand of the director's assistant is being used to paint the cockroaches in that scene. Like,
okay.
Who needed to know that? Who cared? I mean, maybe the hand of the assistant. They're like, oh, that's my hand, and you need to write it as weirdly as possible. I have a little bit of additional stuff I wanted to throw in here, too. This is from editor Ann Coates, said the director was a real character. He had been a very top editor, but was totally disorganized. And so it was not easy to cut the work in a way because Elliot Kastner wanted a straightforward storyline movie. And Aram was the kind of director that just shot off the cuff, bits and pieces here and there as he felt like it. She also says that Charles Grodin was very difficult to handle and did not get along with Bergman. So, you know, it caused a lot of problems. But I
Sounds
think the main problem with that film was the scripts. The first script was so much better than the 10 they wrote afterwards, because everybody was putting into it. And I think
even Charles Grodin.
Yeah, when Charles Grodin started putting into it, she's like, uh-oh, this sucks.
I like him as an actor. I like all the people in here, and it's just, yeah. I mean, James Mason annoys the fuck out of me, but we watched this movie, and I was like, it's not doing what I want it to do. It's just boring. It's a deluxe widescreen laserdisc I got did not look very good. It's kind of blurry.
One of the main critical...
kind of one of those, like, bored shitless of interesting.
Yeah.
There's some fun things in there. Like, at the beginning, I thought was nice, and there was a little bit of, like, social commentary with...
So, one of the things that took the most...
With life.
...hammering from the critics in this, you want to take a guess at it?
The cockroaches? No. Let me take a guess. No, I can't even think.
The chase scene being too long?
That's a good call, but no. It is his fucking dull as dishwater narration.
Oh, yeah!
Oh,
I liked
God.
It. And there was a thing on IMDb where apparently there's a version of this that doesn't have the narration.
Yeah.
And imagine how worse it would be.
Apparently, for a long time, they distributed this movie without it, because they were just like, it's so bad, fuck this. And they just took it out, and so it played on television a bunch without that.
I thought we agreed it would be worse without it.
I think it would be worse without it, but, you know, selling a movie, you're like, Jesus Christ, if you've seen it with it, you're glad we cut it.
There's so many movies that do that. That's the cut of Blade Runner. There's, you know, without the narration.
Mm-hmm.
With the narration.
It's such a weird... I mean, he does it. They like, shoot him full of Vicodin or something. And they, like, sit him in a room with nothing. And, like, oh, God, I'm bored. Okay, read your lines. Okay, well, I guess I got into some trouble today. And
yeah, a little bit Elliot Gould kind of style.
Mm. Yeah, very much so. This... should have been a more interesting movie. Victor, I think you nailed it with the, like, bored to death of interesting comment. Because it really seemed like, you know, that chase scene at the end where everyone's riding horses after the car. And it was just, like, too much in there.
It is not the long goodbye.
I just don't
That's
really give you a lot of reason to be invested in anything that's happening.
I was excited. Candace and Grodin are in a movie together. I was very excited for this.
It does explain their...
It gave me a reason and then just took a poop on it.
Yeah. Knowing that they didn't get along really, like, makes that chemistry that they had make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd think it could also make it more interesting, but it didn't.
Right, yeah. Could have played off of that, that energy.
I mean, I own it, so I'm going to have to watch it again. Maybe it'll get good. four or five viewings. There were things I liked about it. It's not getting a do not recommend, but it's, you know, whatever.
I like that she had a lesbian side piece that they barely tipped their cat at.
Yeah, that was kind of neat to get that on the tape. Because it was obviously that. We're both like, we're all like, yeah. Is that what this is?
That's what this is.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
It was just a funny moment when they're like in the pool and swim up to each other. And did they kiss or did they just like... go to kiss and they cut away.
I don't know. I think they cut away.
Yeah.
It was something where they went to do something that wasn't going to get admitted at this point. And this was 74. I mean, they show it in Personal Best, but then she's a villain.
Yeah.
She's not
saving the day.
No, she's not training hard enough. Remember Personal Best?
I do.
The coach was like, oh, being a lesbian sucks and you suck because you're not training enough.
Although you're in the Olympics and you made it to the Olympics.
And so. It would have been the same if it was a dude, but I like Personal Best.
I'm going to go ahead and rate this one 5.5, I think.
Huh. 5.5.
Either you?
I don't know.
Yeah, I need to see it again. But right now, I have to give it higher because I own it. I'm going to give it a 7. 6.5. What happened?
Something weird. Hold on.
You can pause it.
Okay, there we go. I think I've got it.
Hands
fixed.
Where everyone can see them. Sorry if we made a rattling noise.
Yeah, it's weird. It was weird.
Look at all these pops and skips. It's like people wanting vinyl over CDs. You know, you're gonna want that in your podcast. We're salt of the earth podsters.
Did you rate this?
Yeah, I don't know. I was like 7 because I own it, so maybe 6.5 in reality.
Okay.
I would watch it with y'all again. I would.
Yeah, give us some years.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do mean.
I might go thumbs down, but it's like just barely a thumbs down because I don't want to see it again.
Enthusiastically thumbs down
because I don't want to see it again.
What is bringing it to close to up? Candace Rocks. Oh, the lesbian kinda, side plot. Yeah. I hear you.
Also, that it's a like set in the UK. Yeah, I always kind of like that.
Oh yeah, the scenes, the scenery or whatever.
And this is
true.
A Pinewood movie.
That's true.
So I dig that. A lot there of those old like classic UK background films, which is fun. Are we ready for the next one?
I've got food stuck in my teeth. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, we're moving on to number 4, Green Eyes, 1977. D. I love the D. That's me. I am D. IMDb. I gave this a 10 on IMDb.
Whoa.
Green Eyes, 1977. Winfield and Cousins after Vietnam War. Give me a second here.
Does he know Admiral Kirk? Hold on 1 second.
What happened? The noise? I'm sharp now. Okay. That's what it was. You did the Wrath of Khan thing, and I was doing Darmok, because we've always done a great disservice to Paul Winfield.
It's so true.
I was like, Winfield and Cousins after Vietnam. War. When the children were abandoned. See, because the race talks in metaphor. And that's our hero, Paul Winfield. And it's, you know, I was saying that in here it says explain our great disservice to Paul Winfield, but I think it's because I'm a fan of Enemy Mine, the movie Enemy Mine, which I think does it better than Darmok.
God,
everyone's
I love that.
Beating off about Darmok, and I think Enemy Mine did it better, but I do, and I think we love Paul Winfield.
Yeah.
First off, here's my review. Noel Cousins, played by Jonathan Goldsmith, is a flippin' dick to his poor mother, whereas Paul represents the best of returning vets in both of his 70s Vietnam film. In 1973's Gordon's War, Paul Winfield plays Gordon, who comes back from Vietnam to find the city's community horribly infested with heroin, of which it is now known was brought in by Hoover's FBI to help stop the community getting together and powerful enough to stop our institutionalized racist government and police force, etc., etc. To stop what Hoover called the rise of a black messiah, which Paul Winfield also played in a three-part series we will soon be reviewing called King. Also, Paul's anti-heroin Rambo and does the job right. Also, let's get back to Green Eyes, which to my eyes feels like a theatrical release, but this was in fact a 1977 TV movie. Turn the page. Paul plays non-veteran Lloyd Dubeck, and our film begins with some very seemingly stock footage of actual vets returning home. More stock footage and some still photography of war orphans appear in here. Paul does some drifting and looking up of war buddies that First Blood totally appears to rip off. That gets a theatrical release, perhaps because more time has passed. Also, perhaps because Stallone is white. And there are explosions and killings and macho bravado that the kiddies are conditioned to love. Here again, we have thoughtful Lloyd, who got a postcard about a child of his he didn't know he had with green eyes. His rad mother helps him out the door and go back and look for his child. There he meets his shitty to his mom war friend and a British lady who explains to Lloyd and us just how bad the orphan epidemic is, and that's just what they are allowed to put on television. I feel the real statistics are far worse. Lloyd helps out because he cares, and he brings home all of the war orphans who grow up to bring down our fascist, racist, capital government quick. Not really. But I won't give away, Green Eyes 2. I won't give away the ending, but instead suggest that you watch this decent copy on YouTube. Film also stars Rita Tushingham, as Margaret. Some other super solid character actors, including Lemmy, who plays Trung, the street kid who helps our Lloyd along the way. Green Eyes was directed by John Erman, 1935 to 2021. He was 85 years old. Tons of TV, including MASH, Roots, Star Trek, and That Girl. Erman also directed 1985's TV movie An Early Frost, notably the first film to address the AIDS crisis. Erman was a gay director trying to deal, but the Network Standards and Practices Committee insisted that the main character be presented as a villain. Erman rejected their demands, threatening to reveal their tactics to the media. Ooh. Clearly, I need to rewatch An Early Frost, but this brings me to my final point before discussion. Our hero, Paul Winfield, who was also gay, and when he died, he gave a rare gift to us all by having his tombstone in L.A.'s famous Forest Lawn Cemetery share his name with that of his husband of 30 years, Charles Gillian. Most plaques still don't show LGBTQAI plus partners because of family members insisting that they don't have that. So let's end that. Discuss.
I did not know Paul Winfield was gay.
I know, it changes everything. I'm like, oh, fuck, of course he was. What a sweetheart.
What fucking amazing. This is a really good movie.
Yeah, I cannot state that strongly enough.
It takes on something that is a really difficult, dark story of America and just soaks in it for a while.
They really don't let you off the hook.
No. No, they don't, and it goes on a lot longer, more pointedly than I certainly thought it was going to, because you kind of expect them to take a break from it and be like, maybe we'll let you off public, and fuck no, sorry, no. Like, we're just gonna, like, walk you through each place where this is happening and let you see the darker and darker versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's sort of, like, you know, he's looking for his child. And I like her point. She's like, they're all your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so stinging and so...
I mean, I would have accepted if Paul Winfield was like, well, not specifically. I mean, come on. But I get it. And it's bonk bonk on the head.
It is bonk bonk on the head.
On purpose.
And just like, and also showing you the different, emotional reactions that the people responsible for it have. Like, just how disgusting people were about completely writing off their responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, then right up until the country just wrote off its responsibility entirely for it and was like, mm-hmm. fuck it. We don't know what to do here. We're out.
Just the imagery of millions of children starving to death and dying of treatable illnesses because they're children of war.
Mm-hmm. And it's not done in, like, it's... You know, there's light moments in this. There's touching moments in this. But it has a message. Yeah. Phenomenal. Also, it got on the tape stuff about racism in this. They're like, yeah, if a baby was born from a black guy, like...
It was easier to tell.
Yeah, and so they were just like...
They couldn't... They were less likely to pass as Asian.
And would likely just be killed.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus.
And also I liked that they went into all of those aid agencies
mm-hmm.
that were taking the free food and resources and selling them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had the guy, I think, Trung, the street kid.
Yeah.
I kind of liked the scenes they showed about, you know, how he was able to survive.
And he's a phenomenal mm-hmm. character.
Yeah.
That's the only movie that he's done.
Really?
Just did that.
Oh.
That's really surprising because he was a good actor.
Yeah, he was really good.
Fucking racism. God damn it.
And he does such a good job of explaining, like, how that person, not necessarily him, I mean, him in the movie, but I'm sure, you know, he is a mashup of a lot of different kids. You know, the different scams, the different hustles, like, you know, right. Everyone's waiting, like, there is a through line of save the children through this, and he is like, I'm saving me. And it gets pretty deep into the movie before there's any real trust, from that kid.
Yeah.
To anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And, I thought that...
Now... You were talking about, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but except that, like, his friend, why did he stay in Vietnam?
Oh, because he
had some scam or something, right?
So there was an explosion that he was like, fuck it, I get to be dead?
Yeah. But his poor mother?
But yeah, his poor mom.
And his dad.
Because that's the house that Paul Winfield shows up at
yeah.
and is like, hey, I'm here to see your kid. And they're like, he's very dead and... We're uncomfortable with you being in our home. And then he's back over there and he's like, he's very much the same character from St. Jack, which is something I pointed out during that, where he's like, he's, you know, on the con doing the hustle, you know, trying to like make money and do a little war profiteering with his internal knowledge of systems.
I mean, he helps Paul Winfield, I think.
For money.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not because of their bond of war?
No.
He definitely tells him because of their bonds of war, he's giving him a sweet discount.
These are friend prices.
I'm not even making money on this, man. This is just covering my costs. So, I mean, he is very much that sort of scoundrel who is taking advantage of the situation.
That would be my sequel, where his mother goes to Vietnam and beats the piss out of him. At least it will play a part of my sequel.
I like that.
Are you fucking kidding me? Rape you better.
Fucking alive? Are you? Well, it turns out that you're dead on paper. And so...
You were taking all of these war orphans.
Oh, God.
It is very serious.
I think
you can rate it.
Your 10 makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and I was excited that I was able to see it and get a copy of it and through YouTube, which is for everyone, and it didn't look bad. A lot of the YouTube ones we watch look horrible.
Didn't look great, but it didn't look bad.
I thought it looks way better than most of the ones we watched. That Casey Kasem cocaine can't get cocaine in L.A. movie.
Yeah, that was terrible. And I was thinking the other one we watched on there. Oh no, that was a VHS. Never mind.
Still, yeah. I mean,
because we rented that VHS of Space Is the Place.
Yeah.
And I wanted to throw myself out a window. It was so bad. And then I watched it on YouTube and it was great.
That's happened a couple of times. I'm like, Movie Madness, you got to get with the times. It looks better on YouTube for free. One real quick thing. The information I was giving from the director about an early Frost came from something on the interwebs that I read. A World Cinema review of an early Frost. His article is called Without Even a Kiss, by Douglas Messerly, if anyone wants to check that out, because I found it very darn interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, you know, Paul Winfield was gay, the director for this was gay, and that he was forced to do that in early Frost, and that it said, his article was called Without a Kiss, they weren't allowed to show the two men kissing.
Oh.
They had to, like,
make it gay, but not super gay.
Like, ah, no. So, yes, moving on.
Oh, wait.
Go ahead.
I don't think we got a thumbs up or thumbs down from you, which I'm pretty sure I know the answer to. But
no,
I'm
you're right.
Yeah, thumbs all the way up.
Cool. Well, you are up, Victory. Perfect Gentleman, 1978. Turn on your computer.
Seriously, it keeps turning itself off.
Oh, no. Jesus.
Ashes gave me a computer, and how do I get it to? No one wants to hear this, but it keeps turning off after like 1 minute. So no,
like off or just like,
no? Where I have to put in the password. I hate that.
Yeah, we can go into settings.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you can adjust that.
Yeah, can you adjust that?
4 women: Ruth Gordon, Lauren Bacall, Sandy Dennis, and Lisa Pelican. In bad situations, meet through visiting husbands in prison. When one finds out her crime boss hubby has been cheating, they all get the idea to take his money in a heist plot. They pose as male robbers, hit the jackpot, and run to freedom. Written by Nora Ephron, who also wrote Silkwood.
Yeah.
Hey.
Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, and You've Got Mail.
And that Angel fucking John Travolta movie.
Yep, that too.
No, really?
Challenge!
And directed by Jackie Cooper, who directed a season of MASH.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Wow.
Yeah, it has like a rock star premise.
Yeah, it does.
That you did so well.
He's a crime boss, but he's really a union boss.
I got the impression that
that
was like a secondary. Like he was primarily, like he became a union boss because of.
I'm not saying it wasn't. What I'm saying is the money that they end up stealing are union funds.
That is true. I had forgotten that.
That's all you got on that, Victory? You got more?
Gordon.
They're really looking a whole lot more.
Dennis.
Like I looked for
Pelican.
Trivia and interesting tidbits and found nothing.
Sometimes they're not. I was looking for way more on Paul Winfield. There was hardly any interviews. He was kind of a private person.
Hmm.
Found one interview.
Mind you, I did not do a whole lot of research on this one.
It's a fun movie. I like this premise that they meet. Hold on. Okay. So there's no where do we leave off? So I like that they met there in prison. That was a lot of fun for them to like build that relationship and for them to spend at least half of the movie building relationships and with each other, like these deep friendships, like the rich ladies picking everybody up in the limo and taking them to the jail and just being like good friends with each other.
Yeah.
And I like that they dealt with that with finding out that he'd been cheating and doing that by like, oh, let's rob him. Let's do that. That could be our money.
I also really liked that Ruth Gordon was a professional safe cracker.
Yes.
And just all around had all the skills that they needed magically.
Yeah. Maude was awesome.
Well, she'd known some guys who did some things, and
yeah. Car won't start, so she asked the cops for help.
That was so funny.
I think this was another YouTube one, right?
Was it?
TV movie I think we watched on YouTube, yeah.
It was either that or it was on the Amazon, one of the two.
I think it was on YouTube.
This isn't a very deep movie, but it was fun. And mm-hmm. I had a good time watching it.
It's fun, and I think, like, as rad as the premise sounds, it could have been better. You have these really cool people in it. Sandy Dennis, Lauren Bacall, Ruth Gordon, and the other.
Pelican.
Yeah, not as familiar with her work. And the premise is really cool, but for some reason, it could have been better. Maybe because it was made for TV, I don't know.
Probably.
I like that it gives a little window into the experiences of like what the prison life is like for the woman who's supporting them on the outside.
Yeah, I liked that too.
That's true. I would definitely watch this again, more enthusiastically than 11 Harrow House.
Oh yeah.
I'm kind of like, oh yeah, already. It's starting to fade. I can just watch it free on YouTube anytime I want.
Thanks, YouTube.
Thanks, YouTube. Do two commercials now every time.
Are we ready to rate?
Yeah, if you like. Did you say, you said to, Nora Ephron, Jackie Cooper.
Nora Ephron.
Yeah, that's neat. Because this is like, you know, one of her first works.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
And she's well known for doing all those 80s love story things that my Aunt Kathy loves.
You've Got Mail.
Yeah. Which is crazy. So many people love that movie, and it's a remake of a good movie. You know, which is not called You've Got Mail. I can't remember the name of it. It's like three letters from Sunset. I don't know. I really fucked that up. I would give this...
Yeah, she did a lot of writing for TV and all sorts of stuff.
I'll give this a 7.2.
Ah, I'm going to go flat 7.
Thumbs up.
Nice.
Cool.
Last movie?
We're just doing Green Eyes again, because I haven't turned the page. Starting over, 1979. Because we're doing a straight 6, because someone insisted on it.
Yay.
Yay. Starting over 1979, I am sorry, but this is a good example of a 70s movie. There's about 9 familiar faces here, including a bumbling Burt Reynolds as Phil, a singing Murphy Brown as Jessica, a take-no-shit Jill Clayburgh as Marilyn, Charles Durning, the senator from the amazing time travel fantasy The Final Countdown, plays Phil's brother Michael, got that in there just for you, and Rad AF Frances Sternhager plays Marva, Phil's sister-in-law.
Man, don't ever tell Dominic you don't like a movie.
You will hear about it forever.
And it will suddenly become his most favorite movie in the universe.
Not true. I owned it before I even knew either of you.
I'm not saying this
saw it in the theater. I can't go on. I'll be in my trailer.
Oh my god. Final Countdown
podcast coming soon. We reviewed it.
We did.
I got you to review it.
Yeah, true.
Screenplay by James L. Brooks. You may know him from The Simpsons, Broadcast News, Terms of Endearment, Taxi, Rhoda, Mary Tyler Moore, etc. Based on a novel by Dan Wakefield and directed by Alan Pakula. You may know Alan Pakula from All the President's Men, Clute, The Parallax View, etc. So, Phil gets dumped by Jessica, who writes and sings amazingly bad songs that become huge radio hits. that follow through that follow Phil, Burt Reynolds, through the rest of this movie, and it's gonna be easy for you to do what you got to do. Stand up on your own. You got it. Made. And it's gonna be harder for me, but this woman's got a right to be more than a shadow of her man. Good stuff. So Phil's brother Michael tries to help him out of his divorce depression with a dinner date set up. This is where Phil and Marilyn, who also doesn't know, meet, both going to the same house. Marilyn thinks that Phil is a creeper because he's behind her the whole way. She gets fierce, and then both should have been told about this date. Phil continues to try to pick up the pieces and go on some dates. Will his path ever cross with fierce Marilyn again? I won't tell. JK, I will, and then do. Candace, Jessica comes back with a new song about how they can be better than ever. Don't fall for it, Phil. Will Phil find love? I really won't tell this time. Not a perfect film, but still quite 70s, and there are lots of nice sets and plants and macrame. Michael has the win here for me when he super lovingly helps his brother get through a rarely shown in 70s films panic attack in a department store. Discuss.
He gets applauded for that.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That goes up an entire point for me, just having that in the movie.
Yeah.
He's so sweet.
I agree.
It is a really sweet scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you also get that moment where, like, does anyone have any Valium? And everybody has Valium.
That's perfect. It hits a lot of 70s movie beats.
Yeah, it really
plants,
does.
Plants, macrame, and everyone can offer you a Valium. I remember the one guy with the mustache. There's like a super gay one. It's just like, oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're all there. Mm. Oh, my God. I kind of didn't like this film.
You bastard.
It
is now my favorite film!
I kind of did as well, though. So, I mean, it's weird. What are you doing?
He's building something.
Like, putting up shelves or something over there. His mistake... I want to start here. Burt Reynolds is in a weird period in whatever Burt Reynolds is doing during this film. He looks funny. He looks like he does in the end.
I love the end.
Just like, I don't know.
He's bumbling.
A little pudgy, a little fucking something, which is just, God damn it. And he just, I don't know. It's just a weird vibe for Burt Reynolds. I don't know that I like it. His acting is pretty good in this, though. He's so over some things and pulled in. It's really funny.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Warren Beatty in Heaven Can Wait.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, he's just this, like, he's us, you know? But you want him to get it more than he does. And it's not as bad as Warren Beatty in Heaven Can Wait for just get it. But, I mean, you know, he had a bad divorce, or he got divorced. He didn't like his relationship with Candace, but she's able to, like, bring him back right away.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. She's got her sexy boots on, and she's there. And that scene was awkward, but I think it was really written well by James L. Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
He walks in, and they've been talking for hours.
Yeah, it's done really well, and she's all vamped up and shirts way open and like
see through and yeah,
what are you doing?
And poor Jill. Yeah. And she's even like, I don't want to hear from you, and then he breaks that rule. I kind of don't agree with that. I don't even remember how it ends, so it's like, I don't want to spoil it, but also I don't fucking remember. Maybe they get, but I think he gets over his divorce in the end. He has started over.
I mean, I don't think he does. I don't think
he does in my head canon,
because he like, she breaks up with him again at that point.
Yeah.
Jill Claiborne does, and is like, do not fucking talk to me. I'm done.
Yeah.
And it just kind of shows them both.
They're friends. Hold on.
Yeah. And then he's real mad about it. And, like, she starts dating, like, a basketball, like, a professional basketball player for the Celtics or something.
Hell yeah.
And he's like, but can't we talk? And she's like, dude, this guy's going to kill you. But then he doesn't. He's just like, cool. And he's like, oh, you're talking with your friend? All right. I'm not nervous about it. Oh, and he makes a comment about how huge his dick is. Do you remember that?
No, because you made it up.
They're at dinner, and she's like, wow, you're so big. Is everything proportional? And he's like, it's proportionate.
Yeah. Right, and was that probably a real athlete? It was a really tall person.
He was like fucking 6'9".
Yeah, he was very tall.
I remember him now. That's right. He kind of looked like a super tall Marvin Hamlisch, who wrote a lot of hits of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I made you two watch a YouTube video of him singing with Ethel Merman a couple of
times. Yes,
but
you
did. I kind of hate this movie for letting all the baddies keep winning. Like, all the people who are making bad choices and being really insensitive just end up getting whatever it is that they want. And I don't like that. But also, it is realism. Like, that does happen pretty often, that, like, people who treat people good and have good boundaries and stuff, for whatever reason, like, that doesn't match up with people's trauma. And when someone doesn't match up with your trauma, it makes you feel weird and uncomfortable. And sometimes it's easier to just be in a shitty relationship.
Yeah.
Than to grow in order to be with the person who's good for you.
You made that point the first time the first time we talked about this after watching the film, and it is a really good point. And I just get so mad at them as well. I'm like, God damn it, though. Like, make a better choice. Like, don't fucking. Why would you go back to her? She like ruined you in the weirdest, most fucked up ways. And you're just like, she shows up in a see-through blouse and kicking boots, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and then also in the end, like, really, you're going to go back to him? Mm-hmm. Like, this guy who treated you like fucking yesterday's garbage?
Yeah.
Because of the power of Murphy Brown.
Besides this other guy who's clearly nice and has good boundaries and...
Like, not only good boundaries, but respects yours?
Yeah.
Rooting for Bill or Bert and rooting for Jill. I guess I combined Jill and Bert.
Bill.
It's like Jennifer Lopez and whoever the fuck.
Or like the episode of Voyager we just watched, Tuvix.
Oh, God. No, it is not like Tuvix. Why can't I remember that guy's name? Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I mean, it matters because my mind is spiraling about it. Ugh, the guy from Dogma was not Matt Damon. Yeah, I agree, though. Yeah, it,
we gave James Mason and Matt Damon the same thing.
It's written sharp by a very competent writer, and there's some real stuff that you can totally see happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there's serious stuff, and it's also kind of a comedy. It's like, Song is fun. It's bizarre. And that's bizarre. Another thing I think that ticks some boxes for me is that it's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think the bad songs follow him. I like that they're on the radio constantly.
I did like
that. There's that other woman who was a good 70s character actor, and he's on a date, and she's like, oh, are you aware of this great fucking song? It's fucking great. It really gives me power in my feminist studies class or something. And which is rad. But he's just like, the song, oh, that's her.
Doesn't he climb out the bathroom window at that date?
I think he might.
It's so fucking...
She's the one that is, like, leaning over the table while they're eating, like, into his fucking face.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Just, I love how that was shot, because it's just so uncomfortable. I'm just like, oh, God. Like, I think I remember, like, myself backing up in my chair, like, trying to get away from her.
You're like, I do not like this.
It's Mary Kay Place. That's her name. She's good. Now, who was the guy who was in the Muppet movie? Who the hell did he play in that?
I don't know.
Austin Pendleton. I mean, here's a picture of him now, but he was in Starting Over, and I can't remember.
Yeah, that's...
Maybe he was another friend of his. But again,
was he in the depression group, maybe?
Oh, God, the group. You didn't say anything about the group, and neither did I.
Oh, yeah, his therapy group.
I liked his therapy group. It wasn't perfect, but I'm glad that they went there. He's in his therapy group. Oh, yeah. And then the feminist group of the women of divorce came in, and they all hated each other.
Yeah.
Except that he was in the therapy group. Thank you. We figured it out together.
I forgot.
And anyone listening to this podcast thinks we should have our shit together.
They hated each other initially, but then in the end, they decided to...
Oh, because there was
room.
That weird Christmas party. It was like, you've got the punch and we've got the turkey and let's call the whole thing off.
I like the, you know, even though the main characters were making bad choices, like at least his friends from the group seemed to be giving him good advice.
They did.
Yes.
Well, also mostly. Acknowledging that none of them could, like, take that advice. And they were all like, I fucked up again and I did this terrible thing.
It gives power to the seriousness of, you know, the journey you go through when you've gone through a big relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of neat, and it showed both the groups. But again, his brother gets the win for me, and his brother's wife, they were kind of cool. They really should have told both parties about the date.
Yes.
And it was a funny scene, you know, it was like, she was just attacked! It's like...
Ooh.
Yeah, that was me.
I don't exactly think I attacked her, but... Oh, man. Oh, man. I want to give this one a 6.5.
Yeah, I'll give it a 6.5.
Yeah.
I believe I gave it an 8. Let's look while you thumbs up or thumbs down, Victoria. What you got?
Yeah, I think I want to give it a... A thumbs up. Not like an enthusiastic one, but like a thumbs
Francis
up.
Francis Sternhagen. That's now it's gone forever, and I'll never find it again. Let's just say I gave it a flippin' 8.
Yeah, that seems fine. Victory, all the birds out there are loving your soaker hoses and are drinking as the little drops come out. It's pretty cute stuff.
Yes,
I know.
I
love
it.
It
gets
that.
A 6.4 on IMDb.
Oh, so...
So
I was a point off.
Yeah.
Not bad, not bad.
I will, at some point in your life, make you watch this film again. Have it be a Christmas party, a birthday party, at some point.
Yeah, no, and I won't be super upset about it.
This movie.
A fun enough movie to watch again after some time
has
passed.
There is macrame.
Macrame ham.
Yes.
Folks, you've done it. We've made it together to the end of these 6 films.
Sorry about the noises.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's
my personal fogginess.
Yeah. Anyway, feel free to reach out to us on either Facebook or Instagram. You can find us by looking up A Decade Under the Influence. You can find us out there on Mastodon by looking up A Decade Under the Influence or DUI. You can also give us ratings and reviews, and we would absolutely love that.
Yes, review our reviews.
Yeah.
I think Victory's were solid. Your first one was really good, and my Green Eyes was exceptional.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Absolutely.
I had good material to work with.
And anytime we
usually
get...
you win.
It's
but
true.
Not today.
Yeah, no.
You always win. Let's build everybody up. They're all great people. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Write us a review because, damn, nobody has. Except us.
Except, well, no, we have.
I know, we have
a few
from people that have just, like, constantly begged to write a review. I have my friend. It doesn't matter. We do a podcast. We've been doing it for a long time. I think we'll find our audience someday.
Yeah.
I have another friend who just subscribed.
Hey.
So maybe there's a review coming soon. So
welcome, other friend.
Thank you, Ren.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They don't want to be known as Karen, because they're not a Karen.
Yeah. So like, although my sister is like, I'm in my Karen years, which I need to make sure I use my Karen powers for good.
Well said.
All right, folks, we're going to leave it there. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.